ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 15 टेक्स्ट नंबर 7। इति उक्तास्तमतं ज्ञात्वा गतासा वरुणान्तिकम् आनीय दत्वा तान् अश्वान् उपाये मे वरणान्नम् इति डॉटर ऑफ किंग गादी। ट्रांसलेशन, व्हेन किंग गादी मेड दिस डिमांड द ग्रेट सेज ऋचिक could understand the king's mind. Therefore, he went to the demigod Varuna and brought from him the 1,000 horses that Gadi had demanded. After delivering these horses, the sage married the king's beautiful daughter. There is no purport. Text 8, translation. Thereafter, Rishik Muni's wife and mother-in-law, each desiring a son, requested the Muni to prepare an oblation. Thus, Rishik Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahmana mantra and another for his mother-in-law with a Kshatriya mantra. Then he went out to bathe. Text 9. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for his daughter, Richika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation. Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. Purport. A husband naturally has some affection for his wife. Therefore, Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Richik must have been better than her own oblation. In Richika's absence, the mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it. I have been told to take text 10 also. Text 10, translation. When great sage Richik returned home after bathing and understood what had happened in his absence, he said to his wife, Satyavati, you have done a great wrong. Your son will be a fierce Kshatriya, able to punish everyone, and your brother will be a learned scholar in spiritual science. A Brahmana is highly qualified when he can control his senses and mind, when he is learned scholar in spiritual science, and when he is tolerant and forgiving. A Kshatriya, however, is highly qualified when he is fierce in giving punishment to the wrongdoers. These qualities are stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:42-43. Because Satyavati, instead of eating her own oblation, had eaten that which was meant for her mother, she would give birth to a son imbued with Kshatriya spirit. This was undesirable. The son of Brahmana is generally expected to become a Brahmana. But if such a son becomes fierce like a Kshatriya, he is designated according to the description of the four Varnas in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varnam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. If the son of a Brahmana does not become like a Brahmana, he may be called a Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra according to his qualifications. The basic principle for dividing society is not a person's birth, but his qualities and action. Om Agyan. Hare Krishna. So, this wonderful chapter, which is very soon going to lead us to the wonderful appearance of Lord Parshuram, the Lord's warrior incarnation. So this is the scenario in which, in due course, Parshuram is going to be appearing, on how he was born to Brahmana parents But I mean, he was a great warrior. And we will discuss as the Bhagavatam takes us through this very exciting and wonderful episode. But in this particular chapter, I mean, in this particular verse that we are taking today, we have the scenario where Rishik Muni was keen that he marries Satyavati, and every father has a particular expectation for his daughter. It was a custom that there would be swayamvars organized where the husband, the prospective husband, has to prove himself qualified to really marry a particular girl, and the father would organize this based on the daughter's qualification. And in this case, Satyavati was highly qualified, and he felt that Rishik was not qualified. And he said that how does he really understand that he's qualified or not? So he told him, in his previous verse we understood that he told him to get horses which were 1,000. What are the horses? 1,000 horses with black ears, with one ear black, whether right or left. There was some liberty given to him. He didn't make it very difficult. He didn't say that only left ear or right. Some liberty was given, some relief. So he said, you get this horse, you know, difficult. I mean, ever since I read this verse, I was, you know, there, we don't see many horses in Bombay. But the few that I saw, none of them had this type of features. Having just one ear, black, very difficult. So, you know, so what it means is he made things very difficult for him. You know, it's not easy to really win my daughter. He was convinced, and he said, you get something like this. And when a person is determined, impossible, it is a word in a fool's dictionary, as we say. So he was determined that I want this lady. And, so he went, he knew how to get it, and he went to Varuna. And some of the Varuna had those horses. I don't know how he had it, but he had those type of horses, or maybe he created them, we don't know. But he got these horses and he gave, and the father was very happy that you have done a wonderful job, and you are qualified now. You have really done something which is very difficult. So here is my daughter who you deserve her. He married, and difficult to understand. But in the next verse it says that not only she, but even his mother-in-law was keen to have a son. So I'm sure Rishik Muni must be a very qualified person. Very qualified, and this personality is Satyavati and mother. They are not ordinary people. We should understand that the fact that they are mentioned in the pages of Bhagavatam makes them supremely glorious. Very great people. As you see further, you see Satyavati, who became a very, very holy river. As we go further, she became a very, very pure river which gives purifying effect to the people who take bath. So these people were not ordinary people. So the only purpose they wanted to do something is for the benefit of the people in general. So not only the daughter, but even the mother-in-law felt that it would be so nice to have a son, with the help of Rishik Muni. And the process was so wonderful that you make oblation, and that's how they would get a son. It was not through a very mundane, horrible, dirty process. It was just a very, very pure process that his Munis would procreate. So what is understood is that Rishik Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahmana mantra and one oblation with a Kshatriya mantra. Now, you know, we say that we have made advancement in science. But to this day, you know, they cannot be a guarantee given by any medical doctor that you will get a boy or a girl. And you do this process and you'll get a boy. Or this process, you get a girl. Now, they are still not able to achieve that. Now, here you see the accuracy of of the progeny that is going to come up, that you will get a son who will be a Brahmana. I mean, son-daughter is already passed. It's definitely going to be a son. But this son, with the oblation that I have prepared, with the mantras that I have imbued in it, it's going to be a Brahmana. And this son is going to be a Kshatriya. I mean, that was the type of advancement and type of evolved mantra strength that people had. That they could do things with such precision. Now, precision means advancement, right? When you do things in very great precision, it means advancement. So whatever actually happened over the so-called advancement of civilization is that we have become more blunt than more precise. We have become more blunt. So he had that precision, Rishik Muni. And Rishik Muni is, I mean, you know, we don't hear of him so much. I mean, he's not one of the famous Munis that we hear of him often. And one of the not so known persons had that specific power. And what to talk of great Munis, like Dhruvas Muni, what sort of power they must be having. We sometimes, you know, as Hare Krishna devotees, I mean, because we have got a very high, lofty understanding of Krishna consciousness, we sometimes really say, oh, Dhruvas Muni, Amrish Maharaj, you know what happened to him. And we don't really, you know, Sobari Muni, you know, we know what happened to him. we know, you know, fish and Sobari. I mean, we just give it. But can you imagine this people's power? Now, Sobari Muni, I mean, what sort of power he had? Now, Krishna used him to teach us the power of sex life. How we can get deluded by power of sex life. You need, Krishna will not use ordinary people to teach lessons to the world. Will use great people to teach great lessons. So Dhruvas Muni, Sobari Muni were great Munis. Similarly, Rishik Muni was a great Muni and he taught by a lesson. But even though you may be great or whoever you are in the material world. You may not be in the world, but you are, it is said that you should not be of the world. You are in the world, but not of the world. Right? We say that, I mean, a devotee is supposed to be in the world. He's in the world, but not of the world. But the fact is, we are in the material world. The principles, the environment does affect the person, no matter how much ever you try. And it is our duty to really work minute to minute, second to second, to make sure that the delusions of the material world don't affect us. And what we see here is a very, very important phenomenon. By nature, the greatest sacrificing love in the material world is a love of a mother for a child, is it not? On the material level, the greatest love on the material level, the amount of sacrificing love that we talk about, unconditional love, is the love for a mother for a child. But in this case, the mother is thinking that the oblation which is being made for my daughter is better. Because it is natural that the husband is more lovingly disposed to the wife, naturally so, than the mother-in-law. Very natural. Very natural. Of course, it is not so natural nowadays. That something different things happening also. Sometimes, you know, all this, you know, people having relations with all sorts of people is, I mean, we have strange things happening in this world. But in a normal course, the husband will have natural affection for the wife than for the mother-in-law. And she felt that I want the best. I want something better than my daughter. This is material life. The mother's love was superseded by her desire to get something better for herself than for the daughter. And she told the daughter that, please, I want your oblation and you take mine. This is the tendency to compare. We always want to compare that I don't have the best, he or she has the best, and if he or she has the best, because I deserve the best, I want that for myself. That is what is happening in this verse right now. A mother is thinking to have the best, and see what major confusion it will create as we go forward in this story. And the daughter, she is a very, very humble and a submissive daughter. She said, okay, fine, mother, you want this oblation, you take. And you know, little did they know that this desire of, this comparing attitude will lead to such horrible results. Many times we devotees, we compare. And I say, it's natural what to do, and it's natural to compare. Little do we know what it can lead to. And we'll discuss this as we discuss this verse. So the reason why we are in the material world, originally, the original reason, is because we compared ourselves. The desire of comparing is there in our heart since time immemorial. We saw Krishna enjoying in the spiritual world. And just like this lady, if Krishna is enjoying, I also want to enjoy. Why am I not enjoying? You compare. I'm great. I'm wonderful also. No doubt Krishna is great, but I'm also great. I also want to enjoy. Comparing. The moment you compare, disastrous effect. This one thought of comparing was the cause of all of us being here in the material world. This one thought of comparing. Can you imagine how disastrous it is to compare with anybody? Kali Yuga, the result of comparing, that we are born in Kali Yuga. Kaler dosha nide rajan asti ekan mahaguna. But we'll not talk about the mahaguna today. We'll talk about the dosha today. The Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. There's ocean of faults. And one thing that is missing, one of the things that is missing, like anything, as the Kali Yuga process progresses, is the feeling of satisfaction. It is slowly but surely getting depleted. More and more and more and more people are dissatisfied with what they have. The media, all sorts of media, where you talk about the posters, the banners, everything, what are they meant to do to us? Okay, for many of us, we feel that they are meant to just give us information, what is available in the market. That, you know, they put some photograph and they say, oh, it's a nice information. Oh, today this is available now. Oh, this is available. This store is open now. Is that the purpose? That, you know, why they should spend to make big banners that we see all over Mumbai nowadays? It takes huge money, and much more, you know, to put things on the media in the form of television and magazines. These ads are very, very costly. You know, one of the biggest businesses in the world is advertising. People have become billionaires just buying this business of advertising. Why? Because, you know, they charge so much money for what? Not just to give information. The main purpose, if you understand, going deep into the matter, is the main purpose is to convince all of us that you are dissatisfied. You are not happy. And that's why you need that. So by nature, we are by nature dissatisfied. And to top it up, you know, the whole media is bombarding us with this philosophy or this conviction that you are not happy, you are not satisfied because you do not have this. You do not have that. You are not visiting this store. And so many other things. So this whole purpose is to make us dissatisfied. Like Krishna in the spiritual world is unlimited. It's constantly increasing. Krishna is constantly increasing. So there is not a point in time where we can completely satisfy Krishna. Right? Because even if you work very hard and you are able to please Krishna completely at one point in time, but by that time Krishna is increased. Is it not? That's the understanding we have. So we can never completely satisfy Krishna, because even if you have tried to satisfy Krishna, Krishna has increased. He increases every moment. So there's never a time you are completely satisfied Krishna. And that perverted reflection of Krishna never being satisfied, when it comes to the material world, it comes and gives us the feeling that I can never be satisfied with whatever I have. Because we have this wonderful example of the banyan tree. What is highest in the spiritual world is the lowest. Like complete reflection. So that reflection of Krishna not being satisfied. Krishna is, there's never a time where Krishna is satisfied. There's more and more and more service. I remember in one of the lectures, you know, Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning a very simple point, but very profound point. He said, there's a rose and there's Krishna. So what happens? Now, rose is in Shantaras. And Krishna is there. So Krishna, while he's enjoying with the gopis, and while he's doing all the Vatsalya Leela, Madhura Leela, and all Sakya Leela, there's a rose there. So what does the rose do? The rose becomes very beautiful and very fragrant. And Krishna smiles. And the rose becomes more fragrant, and Krishna smiles. And this is eternally going on in the spiritual world. So a rose is thoroughly satisfied for rest of eternity. It keeps on becoming better and better and better. And Krishna keeps on smiling more and more and more. And there's never end. And this is the Leela. Nitya Leela. This is what is Nitya Leela. Because how can something be Nitya when it ends? Because it doesn't end. But there is no limit to how much you satisfy Krishna. But the sad part is that we are not in the spiritual world. We are in the material world. And that reflection has come, that desire has come to all of us, that we are never satisfied. The desire to enjoy is unsatiated. There is no satiation to that desire. Just recently, I mean, you know, the Indians are just getting caught up into the fad of iPad, right? You know, iPad, we talk about, you know, just see how this technology is working. I remember when I got into the technology world, you know, when I was a student, didn't have much money, but then I got into technology, I came and I saw people, you know, having computers. You know, computer, it was very fascinating. I'm 10 years, many of us, you are 10 years younger to me, 15 years, but this I'm talking about 87, 86, you know, when we first saw a computer, it was fascinating, black and white screen. But you know, just Fox Pro and database D-base program was very fascinating. You know, so if you want to learn, and then I pestered my father. I said, I want a computer, desperately need a computer. To be happy, I have to have a computer to play games and everything. So that time my father bought a computer with a green screen. There used to be a green screen which was the monitor made of, what is it? I don't know. A green color, you know, it was not a black and white, much, much older version. And then I was very happy, but the moment I bought it, you know, I saw one devotee, I was a devotee by then, I saw a devotee having a small little pocket computer. Just in 3 days, I bought that, and I saw this, and he opened it in front of me, and I said, oh, what's that? And then he was typing, it was so handy, he would just put in the pocket, it was the latest, computer. I said, this is something which I need. Well, how I want to carry my computer. So that's how, you know, and then people got into the laptops. The laptops became very big, then they became very small. And there's middle, everything that you want, right? Some people need big laptops, some people want small laptops, some middle. And then they said, no laptops. You know, now everything is touch screen. Then you have this tablets now. Now, tablets are meant for people who are sick. I mean, who takes tablets? Sick people. Huh? So this technology is basically making us sick. Try to understand. It's confirming that you are sick. And it's going to make us more sick. This, what came is the tablets. I mean, a tablet means you just have a screen and... So people have just, you know, got fascinated by these tablets now. You know, everywhere you see people carrying thin computers, and it's fascinating, you know, if people just have it and they open it, and people look at every motion of them doing with something with them, and they open it and everybody looking at, like, I came in the train yesterday, and I don't know whether it was deliberate, this man removed from his bag, you know, I don't think he need to really work, but he just opened it, you know, and people were, they were half asleep, and then train people are sleeping, and nothing to do in the train, you know, just, and nothing exciting, you know, the same old station, the same old batata vada stalls, and nothing exciting. But this person got something exciting, he opened from his something, and so, and they were all, everybody, it was, not many people, everybody was looking at them, and then, you know, and he was just feeling so nice that I have a tablet. Yesterday night, I was on, after I came here, I was just doing some surfing, some research on this lecture, and I came to a news article that this Apple has come out with iPad 2. I said, we are just not yet completely overcome the fever of iPad 1, and here Mr. Steve Jobs is released. He's a sick man. I mean, he's a terminal, but still he wants to, a great soul, no doubt. He ate Krishna Prabhupada's prasad, and that's how he has this brain, very fertile brain, to make all this fantastic, you know, very fantastic technology, which is fascinating, and it is helping ISKCON movement very much, because many of the ISKCON is Mac culture, we call it, the Mac revolution, whatever. But this person releases the iPad 2, and then I was thinking, I mean, just thinking in my mind, that, you know, this is never an end. There is never a cessation to what you have. Even if people struggle so hard to gather 40,000, 50,000 rupees, or whatever, $500, $600, $700, that they make hard struggle to somehow buy that machine. And, you know, they finally go to the shop. And after 1 month, they see there's something better is released. And they again struggle for that. Just imagine, this is the situation of the material world. We are never satisfied with what we have. Never. And that is why I spoke to one of the psychiatrists. I was speaking, discussing one case, and he was telling, there's something what is called the PMD, the post-movie depression. Now, you know, it is not a phase made by him or something. It is a phase which is existing in the psychiatric books. That is a post-movie depression. Then many people go through this temporary depression, which if continued, becomes a sort of a permanent depression when they see movies or when they see anything, television or something. What is it all about? It says that when they see movies, when they see all these things, you know, in movies, obviously, they're going to use the best of cars and the best of hotels and best of ladies and best of beautiful-looking men. They all see, they're constantly bombarded by all the best things. And, you know, and they're in their glamour world for three hours. You know, they're enjoying with that people. But when the movie ends, you know, they have to come out of the theater or come out of that. And they get into major depression because they start immediately connecting to what they have seen, because the eyes is very powerful. Dehato vishan pungsa sangatesu pajayate. When you contemplate through the object of the senses, one gets attached to it. So when you see something for 3 hours constantly, you get attached to that idea. Suppose, you know, I don't know how many of you, suppose you see some James Bond movie. You know, this man, he does some, you know, strange things, but very, very amusing things. And he does something, little things he does, and you know, there's a couple of, you know, ladies who are with him, and, you know, not mother, I was about to say something. There are a couple of ladies with him, and you know, he does all these things, and we know it is false, but we still identify with it. And then we get into actually a depression. Why is it that they have something that I don't have something which they have? The world is changing very fast, they say, and more wonderful things are coming, and the person is thinking, but I am still in the same old fast train. The world is moving fast, but I am in the fast train doing nothing. The Mercedes Benz, all sort of big cars are coming, but I am still in the same train. It's depressing for people. They actually go into major depression when they see people. Why is it? Because they compare. There's constant comparison going on in the world. You get out of this temple, and all that is there in this world is nothing but comparison. Everybody is comparing themselves to each other, and they are trying to either feel very happy about something which they have, or lament about something which they don't have. So, this is, Radhanath Maharaj was explaining that if we want to be serious in Krishna consciousness, then we have to very scientifically understand how the material world works. It is not just that we talk about spiritual life. It is very important to understand the glories of Krishna consciousness, the wonderful pastime of the Lord. No doubt it is very important. But it is equally important for all of us, if we want to be detached and to be attached to Krishna, if we want to be attached to Krishna, we first have to be detached to Maya. Right? We can be attached to Krishna when we are not attached to anything else. But if we are attached to Maya, then we have to detach ourselves from Maya and then we can attach to Krishna. So the first process is to be detached from Maya. And how do you get detached from Maya? To understand the way she works and understand from the Shastras how the Shastras expose her modus operandi. How she operates. And when we understand that, then we should be, then we can be convinced about Krishna Leela. Recently, Deyamri Swami Maharaj was telling this story. I'm sure all of you attended the story of Prabhupada sitting on the Rath Yatra cart. This is Rath Yatra. This is the Leela of Vrindavan happening, where the mood of Rath Yatra is to take Krishna from Kurukshetra to Vrindavan. And Prabhupada is a pure devotee of the Lord, who is relishing this pastime in his heart constantly. But sitting on the Rath Yatra cart with a young sannyasi who is holding his danda very tight, and he asks this question: what do you think about the ladies of New York? You have heard this story. What do you think about these ladies of New York? And the sannyasi is shocked, to say the least. The Prabhupada is talking about, and Prabhupada not only once, but he keeps on asking, what do you think? And to top it up all up, to the icing over the discussion, he says, aren't they beautiful? And I'm sure sannyasi was wondering what to say, yes or no. Prabhupada said, aren't they beautiful? And then Prabhupada made a brilliant statement. He said, because they are beautiful, you see all these things around. The big skyscraper buildings, the different avenues and all these things. All because they are very beautiful. Because they attract the men and the men want to impress them. That's why they work so hard to make these things to impress them. What a deep statement. And that's the story of the material world. Punas puna charvita charananam. Chewing the chewed. What is the chewing the chewed? There's desire for satisfying the senses. So we must understand very, very scientifically that how this material world really works. And then we can understand how to really use that, the way the material world works, in a Krishna conscious way, so that we can learn something in Krishna consciousness and equip ourselves to become a better devotee. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also that Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na Sochiti na Kankshiti. There is neither a person who is Brahma Bhuta platform. He is neither sochiti na kankshiti, neither hankering nor lamenting for anything. That means he is satisfied. Is it not? When a person is not hankering or lamenting, that means he is satisfied. But if you are hankering and you are lamenting, then you are not Brahma Bhuta, you are Bhuta. You are a ghost. Because ghost is never satisfied, he is always unsatisfied. Of course, the Bhuta in this way, we are using the Hindi language. If you are not Brahma Bhuta, then you are a Bhut, you are a ghost. Your ghost is never satisfied, it always wants to haunt people and get satisfaction, get happiness from them. Right? So what it means is, if you are not satisfied, if you are not satisfied with what you have, then you can never be satisfied. And that's why that particular whole story of Vamandev, the whole incarnation of Vamandev, this brilliant incarnation of the Lord, and one of the major lessons that the whole story is teaching us is that if you are not satisfied with what you have, then you will never be satisfied, no matter you get the riches of the whole world. The one thing which really changed my life in the initial years of Krishna consciousness, I came to one lecture, I forget the speaker, and he made a statement. I said that he read an interview of, at that point in time, the richest man in the world. I mean, he was being told that you are the richest man in the world. And then the Guinness Book of Records said that, well, you are the richest man now. Your name is going to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. For this year, you are the richest man. So, you know, obviously there was so many people to really interview him. And the speaker said that he was interviewed, and one of the interviewers asked him that, how will you describe the state of your mind right now? In one word. In one word. And no, so then the speaker asked, what do you feel? So everybody's, I also answered that, blissful, happy, and so and so. You know, I'm very happy, blissful, you know, great. He said, if you want me to describe it, then he used the word more. If you want to know what is my state right now, I want more. M-O-R-E. That's how he said it. They want more. This is what it is. This man is the richest man in the world now. But still, what he's saying? I want more. So, Vamanadev and all these people, they come to teach us the lesson of how we should be satisfied with what we have. And this satisfaction, it is said in this verse, is important. The one word is important. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for her daughter, the mother-in-law thought, it is all in the mind. That you think, it is not the fact. She thought. See, this is important to understand. It is all in the mind. That she thought. It was not actually the case. Both had, if you know now, both were powerful enough. Reaching Muni had put right amount of powers in both the things. But she thought, it was not the fact, but she thought that it was something which was not. Is it not? It is all the mind. The mind convinces you of something which is not. And that is what? If something which is not is what? It's Maya. That which is not. So mind convinces you to take shelter of that which is not. And that is Maya. And that is why we need to exercise, train the mind. And Krishna says in the Gita, how do we train the mind? What are the austerities of the mind? Satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. I repeat, first thing, satisfaction. Second thing, simplicity. Third, gravity. Fourth, self-control. And fifth, purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. The first thing Krishna says, the austerity of mind is satisfaction. Because Krishna knows that we are living in this material world, we will never be satisfied by what we have. So keeping and not being satisfied is nothing but an outcome of a complicated mind. Or if your mind is simple, then you are satisfied, is it not? If you are a simple person, then you are satisfied in any situation. But when you are complicated, then you are not always satisfied. You are many times dissatisfied. We were recently, just last week, a few of the devotees, we were in Sridhar Mayapur for some service. We were doing something. Gaurang Prabhu was there, Shuddhi Dharma Prabhu was there, Jainitai Prabhu from London, they were there. And they were discussing there was a presentation to the GBC. The GBCs have made what is called the strategic planning team. That they want, they are different teams that they have made to help them discuss different important aspects of ISKCON. You know, different committees, it's difficult to get into details. Different committees have been made, and each committee, 16 of them, were making presentations to the GBCs. And you know, everybody had worked, was really, they racked their brains for 4 days, and the outcome of 4 days of intense discussion was presented to the GBC, and everybody was there. It was the last day of the meeting. Everybody was presenting, and everybody, you know, people were using the latest management techniques, which are very wonderful, very useful to use in Krishna service, and very excellent marketing techniques, very excellent, you know, like one committee was for global financing, global fundraising. So they were using fantastic techniques of fundraising. There's one committee of outreach. There's a preaching which is Radhesham Prabhu and others are involved. They were making different ways of outreaching how we can spread Krishna consciousness. There's one committee which is talking about the succession of Prabhupada. What will succession of his. So many interesting committees. They all made presentations, and you know, the devotees were with Radhanath Maharaj. They after the meeting, Maharaj met them, and try to understand 4 days of intense discussion and management principles applied, marketing principles applied, and then they meet Maharaj. The presentation went off quite well. Everybody was very happy. And Maharaj said, we should all remember that Prabhupada was very simple. He said, this is all glorious and we must do this. But Prabhupada, even though he made this huge international society, which is actually a complicated thing, right? To make a whole international society for Krishna consciousness is a very complex thing. But Maharaj was explaining, but Prabhupada was a very simple man. Prabhupada's pleasure, he was saying, was after making all the Mayapur temple and all these things, he found more pleasure and more satisfaction in going to the Ganges and taking his bath in the Ganges. If you go to this place, the Bhaktivedanta Manor, now Bhaktivedanta Manor is a great place. You know, it belonged to the Beatles. It is a very, very old structure. Very royal and regal structure. And that was donated to Prabhupada. And this was, Prabhupada's, this particular description that I'm speaking about is Prabhupada's Vyas Puja, which was celebrated in Bhaktivedanta Manor. So here Prabhupada was, you know, he had a big mansion which was donated by the Beatles, which were at that point in time the greatest people in the world that way. And they're given something to Prabhupada. And it was a very, very, very old, beautiful royal structure. And Prabhupada was sitting with all offerings in front of him. Everybody, all the thousands of people were accepting Prabhupada as the spiritual master and glorifying him. And after the whole glorification is over, Prabhupada is having his Vyas Puja feast. And there's a photograph taken of Prabhupada taking this feast and is put in the same place where Prabhupada is taking his feast. It is in his room at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Okay? That photo was taken and is put in the, and if you go now, even you see that photograph. And there you see Prabhupada's amazing simplicity. It's such amazing. I've taken a photo of that to show whenever we can. That Prabhupada is sitting in there's a huge amount of bhoga in front of him. He's sitting in that place. The overseeing is the beautiful garden of the manor, you know, the famous big garden. He's overseeing that. I mean, it's the most luxurious place in the world at that point in time. And everybody's glorifying. Prabhupada is sitting with his dhoti up right here, sitting in a very casual way, eating. Very casual way. And then you go further in this room and there's a huge tub which was part of that room of Prabhupada. Huge tub. Very regal tub. You know, nowadays people, you know, want the tub bath. You know, it is regal to have a tub in your bathroom. And this is, I'm talking about in the 70s. The English tubs, which are really regal. The taps are this big, you know, and everything. Prabhupada was offered this tub and everything. Prabhupada, it sits in the, because, you know, there's, if you want to take bath, you have to sit in the tub only because there's no other place. You have to sit in the tub. And Prabhupada sat in the tub. He took a bucket and a lota. And the tub is... he took it... whether he's on the banks of Jamuna or he's in Hawaii or he's in London Manor, he is a simple man taking bath with a lota. He didn't change. Prabhupada didn't change at all. If Prabhupada was affected, he would have changed. Is it not? But this man... Prabhupada is such an amazing personality. He didn't change at all. And what sort of success was offered to Prabhupada? Unbelievable success. So this is the point that Maharaj was explaining. That no matter all of us, we have to use latest technology, latest research in management and marketing to attract. Yes, because the world is going with jet speed towards Maya, and we have to go with the double speed to catch them. So yes, we have to use that. But it's a very great challenge for all of us. That in spite of being associating with this technology, with this mind frame of preaching in a supposedly complex way, to maintain our simplicity of heart. And that's what a lesson that he was trying to teach us, that you might do all these big presentations, and you must do it. It is important, it's required. But what is our happiness? Now, this one thing is that we do things for others. But it's not that we live only for others, right? We have some our own life. Janma sarthaka kari kar paropkar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that yes, you must do paropkar, but first, janma sarthaka, be happy yourself. How can you make other people happy when you are not happy yourself? Many times devotees get so extended in making others happy that they are miserable themselves. Is it not? their bodies are in a mess and they hardly get any sleep. You know, they don't eat proper food. And they are extending themselves to others. And you know, they are not happy themselves. They don't get proper nourishment in form of shastra rearing. And they are extending. They get burnt out. And if you have something in the pot and first it boils, and it keep on boiling, then it becomes black, right? If you don't remove it, it becomes black. That's what we call fried out or burnt out, right? How did this term came about? This fried out, it's ISKCON lingo. How did it come? Because you put something on the gas and you forget that it is on the gas, it cooks, it becomes very, at the right, at one point you have to remove it. But you keep on cooking it, it becomes black, it becomes charcoal, it becomes burnt, right? So devotees, they tend to get burnt in their desire to expand, which means that they have not properly balanced their life, because they are not finding, many of us, at least definitely me, we are not finding happiness in the simple things of Krishna consciousness. The simple process. I was just analyzing. Krishna consciousness is a very simple thing. The spiritual world, is it a complex place or a simple place? It's a very simple place. It's called Goloka. Of all the animals, the most simple animal is a cow. And that's what the spiritual world name about, as a simple place filled with millions and millions of cows. Simplest of animals. Krishna, while I was dressing, I was thinking, Krishna actually, the way he dresses is in a very simple way. We could have opulent dressing, and we have opulent dressing, but when we hear description of Krishna in Vrindavan, very simple dressing. So Krishna is a simple God. He's not a complicated God. He just wants a black, yellow dhoti and a simple Vaijanti mala. That's all he needs to really. When he goes to Dwarka, he becomes a little complex. Yeah? But Vrindavan, and that is the Krishna that we worship, Aradhya Bhagwana Vrajeshtanaya. The God that we worship is Vrindavan Krishna, very simple God. The kirtan, originally, we were singing the Sajjitvada Ashtakam. Kartala valam kalakhanta ravam. So it is, what is Mahaprabhu Chaitanya teaching us? With your throat, you sing the best mridu vadya. You sing the best you can, and kartals. It's actually simple kirtan. Of course, you could add so many things. But if you lose the essence, then you are lost everything. If you get multiple instruments, which are good, which are accomplishments, but the focus is always the holy name. Why is this? Why do we take shelter of more and more things? One is, yes, we want to serve Krishna much better by using more and more things in Krishna's service. But one more thing is that we are not finding satisfaction in the simple things of Krishna consciousness. And that's why we want to add more and more things and try to find shelter and happiness in those things. Make things more complicated, because the material world nowadays is, the more complex it is, the better it is. Complicated life. So this is what is going on. So we should try to find the satisfaction in the simple things of Krishna consciousness. That was what we learned from our lessons in Srila Mayapur. And then I was just thinking that when you are satisfied, tushti, the natural outcome of tushti is pushti, is nourishment. And when you're not satisfied, you are malnourished. Satisfaction gives a lot of nourishment, because nourishment, when you're satisfied in your heart, you are just a happy person. When Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, happiness is the outcome of satisfaction, is it not? When you chant Hare Krishna and do everything that is required to chant Hare Krishna, the outcome is happiness. But that happiness will happen only when you are satisfied by chanting Hare Krishna. If you are not satisfied by chanting Hare Krishna, then you will not be happy. So the pushti, the nourishment that is required, is when we find happiness in the simple things in Krishna consciousness. That is, every day attending the morning program. I mean, all of you are so wonderful, great souls, that you know, all of you have a chance to every day attend the morning program. It is actually a simple thing to come in the morning, and it's a very simple melody. We have been told that don't sing complex melodies in morning also, right? Simple melody, but finding shelter in that, you get tremendous, you make a lot of nourishment in finding shelter in simple things. Because Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, is complicated for the complicated. And we would just like to end with this particular personality who epitomized this aspect of satisfaction and simplicity in Mahaprabhu Chaitanya's Leela. It was this great devotee, Kolovecha Sridhar. We all know the story. We all know the story of this personality. I mean, what is most amazing to me is that he was in such a high level of Krishna consciousness, but when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked for him at doing Mahaprakash, none of them knew who was Sridhar Kolovecha. Such a simple person, and such a satisfied person in heart, that he was getting complete satisfaction without getting any recognition. Many of us, I was analyzing, at least for myself, if I want to be satisfied in something, I need to be recognized in what I am doing. But then I feel satisfied. Okay, people have recognized me. Well, you have done a great job, my friend. People appreciated me. Then, now I am pleasing my guru. My guru has tapped me. He has looked at me. We constantly need recognition and appreciation to be satisfied. Why? Because we have no substance within. We need something without to get satisfaction. But here was a man, Sridhar Kolovecha. Can you imagine what level of satisfaction he must be getting? That none of the devotees were really sargrahis. They really knew every devotee who was a devotee. They were not the types that they would ignore some devotee. I mean, all these great Mayapur, I mean, devotees, Advaita Acharya and Gadar Pandit, all these, they were people who were great lovers of devotee association. Are you understand? I mean, let's go into this matter, that they really wanted to associate with every single wonderful devotee. They were hankering for association. Still, Sridhar Kolovecha was successful in keeping his identity concealed. Can you imagine the satisfaction this man must be getting from just the serve? And what was happening? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming every day and stealing his, and actually satisfaction in losing. Many of us feel satisfied when we gain something. But here was a man who was satisfied not losing once, but for years together he lost everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would take away everything. This is a man of a simple heart and a satisfied heart. Completely satisfied. So let us really, you know, meditate upon these personalities. That how, with all the wonderful things that we are doing, we are trying to use the latest things in Krishna's service, and we must do that. I was thinking that we should get into this mood of Pundrik Vidyanidhi. That even though he was very openly dressed outside, but he had a very simple devotion inside. You know, when people saw him, you know, then he was saying, what is this? I mean, he's wearing, we know the description, oil, fragrant hair, chewing pan, and big bedstead, and sitting in a very regal position. And you know, even a personality like, what is this desire? Gadar Pandit, was Srimati Radharani. Can you imagine Radharani getting bewildered? Why have you got me here? You know, this man, he looks to be a person who is attached to a lot of comfort. And then they said, just one verse, how bakiyam stana kala kutan. And all the simple devotion just flooded from his heart. Boom, boom, boom. So let us use all our Mac and sack and everything that we use. All the technology, we must use it if we want. Not that you have to. But let us use it, but let us never, let us never trade for the simple devotion that we have harbored. It's the gift of our spiritual master. Let us remain, let us keep it locked in our heart. Let us lose it to the complexities of this material world. Otherwise, if we get into this habit of comparing, and as devotees, we do compare. That this devotee is better. Oh, he gives better classes. Let me try to give like him. And then you are a utter failure. or you, this devotee says, should not compare. Krishna has given you some capacity. Just be happy with what you have, rather than doing something the way others are doing. The reason we do this, the reason we compare, is because we are not finding any satisfaction in our own heart by our activities. And that means there's something wrong in our practice of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness should give us complete satisfaction. If we are not satisfied, if we are finding dissatisfaction, there's something wrong. Like how Vedvyasa is finding dissatisfied. That I did so many things, but I am feeling dissatisfied. And Narayana said, because you're not describe pure devotional service. That means if you are not finding satisfaction, we are in the Vedvya situation where we are not executing pure devotional service. And that is the cause of our dissatisfaction. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitita Koryo Akya Ar Na Koryo Mani Asha. Narottam Das Thakur is telling us that we should find our satisfaction. Ar Na Koryo Mani Asha means we should find complete satisfaction in what? To make the orders of a spiritual master as a life and soul. And that was the satisfaction of Prabhupada. That is the satisfaction that we should all have. To simply fulfill the order of a spiritual master. To do the external things, but maintain this simplicity in our heart. Otherwise, if you get into this habit of comparing, you will get into this Satyavati mother-in-law syndrome. It is dangerous. The Satyavati mother-in-law syndrome, what we call, that you exchange phenomenon, the comparison phenomenon will happen, and our simple life will become all messed up. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. So of course, I'm sorry, I took a long time. So this is what we should all try to meditate upon in this verse, to not get into this comparing mood and just live a simple life, completely sold out to the spiritual master's mission. And in this way, keeping the simple heart and using our fertile brains in whatever innovative ways we can do preaching, but not trading it for our simple heart, we can make wonderful progress in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Yeah.